You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. I'm Art Ray. Today's guest is Anthony Quinata. Anthony Quinata was born on Guam, a tiny island in the South Pacific. Both of his parents were also from Guam, with a father serving in the U.S. Navy. Anthony's fascination and passion for all things paranormal began in childhood while listening to family ghost stories. He eventually became a paranormal investigator, specializing in hauntings, apparitions, and poltergeist activity. It was during this time that he discovered and developed his latent talents and began to embrace his work as a psychic medium, which has continued now for more than 15 years. He is the author of Communications from the Other Side, Death is Not the End of Life, Love, or Relationships. He is a featured presenter at the ARE conference, Living Beyond the Veil, Death is Not the End of Life, Love, or Relationships, in Virginia Beach from November 9th to the 11th, 2012. To find out more, go to his website, anthonyquinata.com. Thank you for coming on the show today.
Well, thank you for having me.
How did you become interested in the paranormal?
Actually, it started when I was around 7 years old. I had an aunt who was married to my mother's oldest brother. And we're from Guam, but my aunt Sue was from Japan. And when I would spend a night at her house, one of my favorite things was that she would tell me ghost stories and folk stories from Japan. And one night she told me a story. Now, this is a woman who's Asian, who was able to make her eyes bug out. And she was telling me one story, leaning towards me. And the end of the story, when she finished it, I was so scared, I jumped. And to this day, I swear, I had to use my hands to keep from hitting my head on the ceiling. Everyone was laughing when they saw this. And I was hooked. I wondered. I don't know if I was so much hooked on the feeling of being scared, but I began to wonder if ghosts really existed, and it just became a lifelong fascination for me.
Well, I was reading a part of your book, and we'll get to that later. Of course, your book is called Communications from the Other Side, Death is Not the End of Life, Love or Relationships, and I noticed you were talking about a male spirit, possibly in your house.
Actually, what happened was that my mother and I were watching Batman, and the show had ended, and I asked my mother, did you still want to watch TV, because the TV was in the bedroom that my brother and I shared, and she said, are you going to sleep? And I said, yeah. She said, well, go ahead and turn it off. So the moment I turned it off, we heard a male voice shout out Rosalia, which was my mother's name. And we looked at each other, wondering, you know, who broke in? And my mother said, who is it? And we heard again, Rosalia. And then my mother said, what do you want? And right then we heard some mumbling or grumbling, and then the front door slammed and the screen door slammed. And my mother said, go check the front door and make sure it's locked. So I ran out and I told her the front door was locked. She said, well, check the screen door. And the screen door was locked. So we had no clue as to what was going on. And the next day we went over to again my Aunt Sue's house, who told us that that night or the night before, when we heard the voice, she heard knocking on the kitchen door. And she stood there and kept asking, who is it? Who is it? When nobody answered, she finally picks up a carving knife and said, well, come on in then. Well, the knocking just continued. What we found out was my grandfather was in the hospital sick and unconscious and kept calling out Rosalia, Jose, Rosalia, Jose. Jose happened to be my mother's oldest brother, who was, again, married to my Aunt Sue.
So somehow, even though he was still alive, he was able, somehow that information was communicated or his spirit became detached from his body?
Yeah, it's called, in parapsychology, it's called crisis communication. And it happens when somebody is dying or very sick and is, you know, reaching out to somebody else. There's also something called crisis apparitions, where the person will actually be seen by his loved ones or her loved ones at a time of crisis or near death.
Before you became a psychic medium, I understand you did a lot of investigating.
I did.
A investigator. When was that? And I mean, were you using EMF detectors or how did you investigate?
Well, initially what happened was, again, I'd had a lifelong fascination with the idea of ghosts and I'd read everything I could about them. And one day I was watching TV and this was in the late 80s. I think it was 1989. And I saw a television program in which a group of people were going through a house that a woman believed was haunted. Now, on the program, all they showed was a camera and people carrying clipboards. So I went out, bought a camera, didn't buy a clipboard, but I was off to the races. I was taking pictures of cemeteries during the day and trespassing in them at night and taking more pictures and getting into any building I could that was supposedly haunted. Now, I had no clue as to what I was doing, none whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know about EMF detectors or anything at the time. But I started reading more books, primarily by a man named Lloyd Auerbach, who had written several books at the time. And that's when I discovered EMF detectors. I started calling him. He was explaining to me how they work. So I bought an EMF detector and started to feel a little more sophisticated, I guess you could say. After that, I started hearing about EVP. So I went out and bought a reel-to-reel recorder, because that's what I read that you use to record these things, and literally after hours didn't get a darn thing.
Hmm.
So then I found out that people were using cassette recorders. And again, after hours of recording, didn't get anything, at least nothing that I could tell. And then I heard about digital recorders, and I went out and bought one. And honestly, didn't use it because I thought this is just, you know, another waste of time and money. But I was out in California visiting my family in Los Angeles, and I went down to the Whaley House in San Diego and did a short 30-second recording while I was there on my digital recorder. And that's when I picked up my first EVP. And once again, my interest in the whole investigating the paranormal was reignited. And after that, I formed my first group.
Did you have any investigations that just something weird happened or you noticed poltergeist activity?
I had a lot of investigations where weird things happened. For instance, the first time I formed a group was with a young lady and a young man, and they told me the apartment building they used to live in was, in fact, haunted. So I said, well, let's go over there. Well, they introduced me to a neighbor that they used to live next to. And I said to the woman, there was a woman and a man there, I said to the woman, what makes you think your house is haunted or your apartment is haunted? And immediately a fork flew off the table and whizzed by my face. And I looked at her and I said, well, that's a good indicator.
Hmm.
So that was perhaps the first really freaky thing I'd had happen. I went to the Stanley Hotel since I normally live in Denver, Colorado, and I saw several things that happened there. But perhaps the scariest experience I ever had wasn't so much because of any activity that was going on, but we determined that a woman had been murdered in the house. And while I was doing the investigation, I kept seeing blue and red lights outside the window. And I would say to my team, the police are here, let me go handle it. So I'd go upstairs. We were in the basement. I'd go upstairs, and there were no police, no flashing lights, nothing. So I'd go back downstairs, and again, we would all see the blue and red flashing lights. So I'd go back up again, and no police, no police cars. But what we did notice was we were all literally terrified just being in this house. And what I later on determined was the women were feeling the fear of the woman who had been murdered, and I was feeling the fear of the man who murdered her, afraid I was going to get caught. The police would show up at my house if I were that man. So, well, eventually what happened was the house just was razed. It was leveled to the ground.
Well, you mentioned that you were feeling these things, mm-hmm. I guess you started discovering that you were a psychic medium while you were doing these paranormal investigations. Is that true, or how did you find out about your gift?
That's very true. I was working with psychics at the time because of what Lloyd Auerbach had taught me about conducting a proper investigation. And one of the psychics I was working with kept telling me, Anthony, I think you're psychic. And at that time, it was literally, in my opinion, an insult to me, because I barely had a belief in psychics to begin with, to be honest with you. And she just kept saying, Anthony, I think you're much more psychic than you're giving yourself credit for. And I kept saying, do not call me a psychic. And she would just laugh. But then what I started noticing was, as I was going into investigations, I would start becoming aware of things that I didn't know beforehand.
We'll be right back with more. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We're back with Anthony Quinata.
I would start becoming aware of things that I didn't know beforehand. For instance, I think the first time I probably noticed it was I walked in and I thought, there's an old lady haunting this building. And 10 minutes later, April, the psychic I was working with at the time, said, Anthony, I think there's an old lady haunting this building. And I said, April, I knew that 10 minutes ago. And I looked at her and joked, so why do I need you? And she laughed. She said, I told you, I think you're more psychic than you realize. First instance where I actually communicated with somebody who had passed was back in 1985. I was at a party that was unfortunately broken up by the police, and I was there with a couple of guys who decided to leave without me. So I called a friend of mine who came to pick me up, and we went back to her trailer where she lived with another woman. And I said to her while we were talking, I said, didn't you tell me you thought your house was haunted or your trailer is haunted? And she said, yeah, why? And I said, I see a man standing in the hallway behind you. And she and her roommate both turned and looked. Neither of them saw anything, and they looked at me like I was nuts. And then I thought, well, maybe I am nuts, to be honest with you. But then I heard this man start to tell me that he wanted me to apologize to them for scaring them whenever he opened their bedroom door. Hmm. So that's the message I passed on, and they screamed. And I didn't understand why. And they told me that the only bathroom in the trailer does not have a door. So they'd close the bathroom door if they were using the bedroom door if they were using it for privacy. And every once in a while, especially when they would take a shower, they would come out of the shower and the bedroom door would be open. Well, I thought, you know, big deal. Bedroom door is open if they're not balanced. And she said, Karma said, no, Anthony, you don't understand. Once you close that door, it's really difficult to open. And then she told me that one time she was standing, blow drying her hair in the mirror, and the door started to swing open, and on the other side of it was her six-year-old grandson. I then asked if I could see the door myself, and we closed it, and I put my shoulder against it and had to shove three times before it opened. So I knew there was no way that little six-year-old boy was opening the door, and I knew it wasn't opening by itself. So that night I was sleeping on their couch, and I woke up, and I literally felt like I was drowning. I couldn't breathe. I heard what was sounded like air bubbles rushing past my ear, and I literally thought, oh, my God, I'm drowning. And that's when I opened my eyes, realized where I was. I grabbed the top of the couch and the bottom of the couch and pushed myself off. When the moment I hit the floor, everything stopped. And I knew I was supposed to tell the woman who owned the trailer, Karma, that I had another message for her. And so she was cooking breakfast, and I asked her, was this area ever underwater? And she said, as a matter of fact, it was. In fact, it was named after the Jordan River. And I asked her, did anybody ever drown in that river? And she said, oh, yeah, all the time. That's why they drained it. And I said, well, I think what's going on is the man drowned where your sofa is. And if I'm correct, you shouldn't have any problem with your door opening anymore. And so I didn't see her for another 3 weeks, and I asked her if she had any issues in her trailer. And she said, you know, now that you mention it, nothing's happened since the night you were here.
Hmm.
So if you would have asked me at the time, are you a medium? I would not have known what you were talking about. I did not know what a medium was. And things like that just started slowly happening over the years. I had a job selling alarm systems, burglar alarm systems, fire alarm systems. So I would have to go to people's homes. And I went to this one woman's home, and I started weeping, literally weeping uncontrollably. And she said, what's the matter with you? And I said, to be honest with you, I really don't know. And then I looked at her and I said, your husband died in this house. And she said, how'd you know that? And I said, your husband died in this house like 30 days ago, and that's why you're buying the alarm system. And she says, how do you know that? And I said, I just know. It's almost like your husband himself is telling me. And shortly after that, she asked me to leave. I didn't get the sale, and I had no clue as to what was going on. But things like that kept happening over the years. And again, I really had no idea what was going on.
You had an experience at a friend's funeral also, didn't you?
I did. I was going over to her memorial service, and I was saying to her, I was talking to her as I was driving over there, that I was going to miss her friendship and that I loved who she was. And she had just had a child, her second child, 6 months before. And yeah, I was just telling her how sorry I was that this happened. Next thing I knew, I was aware of her next to me and saying, Anthony, I loved you too, and I loved our friendship, and I'm going to miss you as well. And she finally finished by saying, oh, by the way, tell my family I'm okay. Well, I started thinking about it, and I was thinking, trying to rationalize it. Well, obviously it was my imagination. But then I thought, well, why would I imagine she wanted me to tell her family she was okay? So when I got to the church where the memorial service was being held, I went up to several of our mutual friends, and I said, Sarah came to me on my way over here. And they said, really? What happened? I said, she talked to me. And the first person said, well, what did she say? And I said, she wants me to tell her family she's okay. And this woman said, well, did you? And I said, did I what? Tell her family that she's okay. And I looked at her and said, are you crazy? They're going to think I'm nuts. And she said, well, I think you ought to tell them. I went up to, I believe, a total of four or five people and told them the same thing, and they all had the same reaction. Well, did you tell her family? And I said, no, they're going to think I'm nuts. And then one woman, Cheryl, the last woman I talked to, when I said I didn't talk to her family, and she asked why not, and I told her what I told everybody else, she said, why would they think that? That's your thing, isn't it? And I said, what do you mean that's my thing? She says, you know, talking to dead people.
Hmm.
And I said, what makes you think my thing is talking to dead people? What do you mean by that? And she walked away, waved, and said, go tell them, Anthony. So I knew by that time that there were paranormal investigators who would use people who were referred to as mediums because they could talk to people who had passed. But I didn't know what a medium was, so I went and I bought a book by George Anderson entitled We Don't Die, and I read it, and I began to wonder, is this really what happened to me? Is this what's been happening to me over the years? So then I posted a little thing on several sites on the internet saying I was looking for people who had lost a loved one that they wanted to reconnect with. And, you know, if they wanted a medium reading, quote unquote, if they wanted a medium reading, they were to contact me, but only give me their first name, and I would contact them back through email and set up an appointment, but it was all going to be done over the internet. And I had a goal to do 100 readings like this, and by the end of that time, by the end of that experiment, I became reluctantly convinced that, yes, I was, in fact, a medium.
You mentioned being able to see and hear and also experience the emotions and maybe certain moments, like, I guess, a dying person's moments. It sounded like with the drowning. you know, a lot of mediums only get information through one channel, like, what do they call it, clear audience?
Right.
Something. Now, I guess you get your information through many channels or many senses, it seems.
Initially, I received a lot of information clairvoyantly. In other words, I could literally see the person who was communicating with me. These days, it's primarily through clairaudience and clairsentience. In other words, I can hear and then I receive feelings and emotions, and I translate those into what I'm delivering to people.
So then I was wondering if maybe you were able to see this spirit at that one place, maybe because it was such a strong manifestation.
Actually, these days I tell people I think it was the soul's way of getting me to overcome my own skepticism about this.
Ah.
So, and once I didn't need it anymore, they didn't feel like they needed to do that. I've been told by the souls that the primary communication on the other side is through feelings and emotions. So that's why they communicate that way to me primarily anymore. For instance, when I was doing the internet readings, let's say I had an appointment with you, and then you would come up on my messenger, and I'd say, "Hi, Art." Immediately what I would do is I just open myself up, and let's say it was your grandfather who passed from a long-term illness such as cancer. I would start to feel older. That's the only way I could explain it. And then I'd start getting weaker and weaker and weaker. And I would say, and then I'd also feel what the only way I can describe it is either a masculine or a feminine energy. And I would say something like, "Your grandfather's passed, am I correct?" And you would say, "Yes." And then I'd say, "Listen, I'm feeling like I'm really deteriorating in health here, and it's really affecting my blood, or it's really affecting my lungs, or it's really affecting my kidneys. Did your grandfather have kidney cancer?" And then you'd say yes, and then it would just go from there.
Well, now, you mentioned opening yourself up. How do you control being a medium, or do you need to control it, or are you having messages all the time?
I'm not the Long Island medium, thank God. But there are times when they will break through. I was once in a McDonald's having breakfast, and I saw a man trying to get his six or seven-year-old son trying to, he was trying to get him to settle down to eat his breakfast. And I remember thinking, "Well, isn't that cool? Father's having breakfast with his son." And I heard a woman's voice say, "That's my husband, that's my son. And they've both been having a difficult time of it since I passed 3 weeks ago."
We'll be right back with more with Anthony Quinata. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. Let's continue our conversation with Anthony Quinata.
And I heard a woman's voice say, "That's my husband, that's my son. And they've both been having a difficult time of it since I passed 3 weeks ago. Would you please tell them I'm okay?" And I literally said, "Well, no, because that's the last thing they need is a stranger walking up to them and saying, 'By the way, I just talked to your wife and she wants you to know she's okay.'" So I don't do that sort of thing, but I do get those messages on occasion. More often than not, what happens is when the messages come through, the people who come to me are brought to me by their loved ones on the other side. May I say, I've always thought, ever since I started doing this, that I'm the last resort. Any medium, in my opinion, is the last resort because our loved ones are constantly trying to communicate with us. It's when they are not successful in doing it that they'll inspire somebody to see, they'll inspire their loved ones to see somebody like me.
Well, now, you're going to be in Virginia Beach from November 9th to the 11th for the ARE conference, Living Beyond the Veil, Death is Not the End of Life, Love, or Relationships. What do you plan to present there?
Well, that's the November 9th is the release date of my book. So I'm going to be talking a little bit about my book and answering any questions that might come up. And then I'll do a few readings for the people in the audience. So I'm really looking forward to it. I'm really excited about it.
Could you tell us more about your book, Communications from the Other Side, Death is Not the End of Life, Love, or Relationships?
Well, it's basically an autobiography, which I did not set out to write, but my editor, Stephanie, convinced me to write an autobiography, And in it, I pretty much go through what we just discussed. My Aunt Sue telling me ghost stories, some of the experiences I had, how I eventually realized that I am a medium, my reluctance at being a medium, and then finally, some of the lessons I've learned along the way, one of them being death is not the end of life, love, or relationships, that we simply change addresses, so to speak, from this physical plane to a higher energy plane. And then I also talk about how to get the most out of a reading if you decide to see a medium. I talk about in my book how to be open to communications from your loved ones on the other side so you don't have to see a medium. It was actually a lot of fun to write.
Oh, yes, and Josie Varga did the introduction or the foreword, I noticed.
She did. She's a good friend of mine. She was introduced to me by another medium, the late Natalie Smith Blakesley, and she called me, and I immediately called. Actually, she emailed me. I immediately called Natalie, and I said, you know, who is this woman, and do you think she's legitimate in her request? And Natalie said, oh, yeah, I wouldn't have referred her to you if I didn't think so. So I called Josie, and we hit it off right away. We've been great friends. I've actually given her a number of readings from coffee shops. One day I was even doing my laundry when we were talking on the phone and her relatives started coming through. So, and she also wrote about me in her book, Visits from Heaven. I'm in the first chapter, and I'm in a couple of other chapters as well in her book, Visits from Heaven.
Now, I was wondering, speaking of visits from heaven, or the idea of that, do you get a sense that these people who have passed away are trapped on this plane or are maybe visiting from a higher realm like heaven, or are they reaching out?
There are souls that are, quote, not trapped, but earthbound. And I've talked to them and they would say things like, well, I didn't see any light, or there were no relatives or guides to guide me over to the other side. And according to Patricia Winkowski, there's a timeline, I think she says it's like 72 hours during which they can cross over, and after the 72 hours, that's what keeps them earthbound, and people like Patricia go around escorting them or helping them to the other side. But more often than not, when people see a quote-unquote ghost, it is somebody from the other side who's a loved one, just checking in and letting them know that they're watching over them. That's been my experience anymore.
Well, now, does anyone else in your family have a gift like yours?
I believe my father was extremely clairvoyant, but being from Guam, and Guam being primarily Roman Catholic, psychic phenomena was nothing we ever discussed. I didn't even hear the word psychic until I was like 9 years old. But he, as he got older, would start talking about things he was aware of, that he had, there was no way he would know there was no way he could know what he was talking about. And one of my sisters once said, Dad, do you think you're a psychic? And he said, well, I don't know, but what I do know is this. And then he'd say something else, and it either happened without his knowledge or it happened within a few days. My brothers or sisters don't claim to be psychic, but I do believe one of my sister's daughters is showing an ability.
Maybe they have the gift, but see, with you investigating the paranormal, you were kind of allowed to explore that gift.
Absolutely. If I hadn't been a paranormal investigator, I seriously doubt I would ever be doing this full time like I'm doing it today, because I would have just written everything off. I'm a huge skeptic about these things to this day. I'm very skeptical about these things, and sometimes I'm even skeptical about myself, to be honest with you, Art.
Well, I think that's you're in a great position, especially if you choose to continue with paranormal investigating, in that when you bring along a psychic, you have a way to validate that data.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I'm working with a young lady now who recently discovered that she's a psychic medium, and she discovered it with my help. So that's exciting. And yesterday we were out just doing things, and I'd say, you know, we were in a restaurant, and I said, okay, tell me what you're getting here. And so eventually, I don't know where she'll take it, but perhaps we'll be working together in the future.
Do you still do paranormal investigating?
Not as much anymore. I have some friends here in Erie, Pennsylvania, where I've been staying for the last couple of months who were interested, so I've been helping them, and I've been doing that sort of thing along those lines. But my primary focus now is helping people to understand that those that they loved and who love them back do not die, and that includes pets.
How do you communicate with pets or experience their presence?
A lot of times a soul will come across and they'll say to me, by the way, tell them I have their dog, Muffy, or something like that. Or they'll simply say, tell them I have their dog, or I have their cat. One man came to see me, and he was a huge skeptic, and he told his wife, I'll believe this if Anthony tells me something significant. So I was bringing his mother through, and I said, by the way, your mother says she has your two hamsters, and that their name is, and he had forgotten all about it, and he looked at his wife, and he said, I did have two hamsters, and their names were, and then he looked at me, and he said, wow, that's significant. So it's normally not the hamsters or the pets that I'm in touch with. It's the souls that are taking care of them.
In your interaction with spirits, do you have to be aware of negative spirits?
You know, if they're not earthbound, the spirits who cross over aren't negative. They lose all the need for negativity. On the other side, in heaven, whatever you want to call it, there's so much peace and joy and love that you're kind of like a pair of brown shoes at a tuxedo party if you're holding on to any negativity. Now, earthbound spirits will maintain and retain their negative attitudes because they haven't gone over to the other side. But it's been my experience that if somebody does come across as negative, it's because that's how they were known if they crossed over. Let me put it this way. If they crossed over and they come across to me as negative, that's because that's how their loved ones would know them. If they came across as happy-go-lucky, and I said, boy, your father's really happy-go-lucky, and they'd look at me and say, well, that's not my father, because my father was a real grouch when he was alive. So he'll come across as really grouchy, or he'll admit I wasn't the most lovable character in the world when I was alive, but then he'll start to explain how he's grown since he's crossed over.
I guess there were experiences maybe you had initially as a paranormal investigator that you may have found scary, that afterwards you thought, oh, maybe they were trying to just communicate something.
Well, actually, if it was scary, again, it's because it's an earthbound spirit.
Okay.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yes, yes. Sir.
Okay, so.
Enlightenment, perhaps.
Exactly. People ask me all the time, well, what about Hitler? What about Stalin? What about Pol Pot? Are they in heaven? And once they're on the other side and they go through their life review and they're naked even to themselves, so to speak, and they see what they've done and they've seen the harm that they've caused, they place themselves on a level that reflects their enlightenment and the lessons they need in order to love again.
We'll be right back with more with Anthony Quinata on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Casey. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Casey. We're back with Anthony Quinata.
Again, if they've crossed over, they're no longer feeling negative. What they're feeling is love. They have nobody to get in their face anymore. They don't have an ego, which is justifying the harm they've caused. Now, that does not mean that all the deeds that they've done, they get away with scot-free. They don't. They have to live with the consequences emotionally of those deeds, and that's what motivates them to want to learn to love, to learn the lessons of love that they didn't get when they were here.
Well, I was wondering, you mentioned about the spirit in the house who was opening the door, who may have drowned, that I guess once you communicated his message to those people that they didn't have a problem anymore, Do you think that some spirits just need acknowledgement? Or
exactly. Uh-huh. Exactly. Sometimes that's what they need in order to cross over. If they've been crossed, or if they did cross over, a lot of times what they need is not so much acknowledgement, but to acknowledge what they've done while they were here. That happens a lot in different readings. So they'll come across, they don't apologize as such, but they will acknowledge, I was a real jerk to you, and I'm doing the best I can from the other side or from heaven to make up to you all the harm that I caused you while I was here.
Wow.
Now, in the case of that man, for whatever reason, he wanted somebody to know that he died in that spot. I often wondered about it over the years, why he felt that need. And to be honest with you, Art, I really haven't come up with a good answer.
Well, I do know, speaking about, you know, just relaying information on someone's death, I used to live in Chicago, and there is a spot on the Chicago Canal where a big, or not too big, but a boat, I guess it was a ferry of some sort, had overturned, and dozens of people had drowned. It was, it might have been the 19th or early 20th century that that happened, and people would see spirits in the water sometimes. It looked like people were drowning, but it was just the spirits. And then they put up a plaque to commemorate what had happened, and those events dropped off. It was like the spirits needed that plaque or just people to know that that had happened.
That makes perfect sense to me. While you were saying that, the thought occurred to me they didn't want to be forgotten so that this will never happen again.
Yes, it's interesting, just putting up a plaque or just something to memorialize them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just something. And no doubt in my mind, not having talked to them or anything, they had crossed over. But it just felt to me, again, like they didn't want the lesson to be forgotten. When you put up a plaque, it ensures that the lesson will never be forgotten.
Yes, and that way they're helping people in the present.
Exactly. In other words, don't forget this accident so it never happens again. I don't think that they had any need, you know, for recognition or acknowledgement as such. It just feels to me as though they didn't want... I don't know if you've ever heard the story of Flight 409?
No.
It was a plane crash in the Everglades of Florida. And what the airline did, which was common practice, they salvaged plane parts from the crash and then simply replaced them into other planes as needed. And every plane that they put parts in, people started reporting seeing the captain, the navigator, people like that showing up in the plane, especially the flight crew, although passengers claimed to have seen them as well. And many times the pilot would show up and he would make it clear. He says, you know, don't forget what happened in this plane crash and don't let it happen in this plane.
So then it's something just to prevent those people from having their untimely deaths.
Exactly. Exactly. There have been numerous reports of people who died out at a washed out bridge and then later on showing up on the road telling people the bridge has been washed out and then vanishing.
Do you have a website where people can learn more?
I do. My website is www.AnthonyQuinata.com.
Well, thank you for all this interesting information, and thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you, Art. It was a real pleasure.
Well, it's time for the Thought for the Day, and today's Thought for the Day will be read by Allison Ray, my wife. Well, hello.
Hi.
And what's today's Thought for the Day?
Today's thought for the day is from reading number 3121-1. As the body may dedicate its life and its abilities to a definite service to the creative forces or God, there will be healing forces brought to the body. This requires, then, that the mental attitude be such as to not only proclaim or announce a belief in the divine and to promise to dedicate self to same, but the entity must consistently live such.
Hmm. Now, what does that mean to you?
Well, to me, this is all about not only having an ideal, not only choosing to dedicate my life or to try to live each day in service to God's people, but also that it's about actually applying it. So it's not about just having the knowledge or having the belief. It's about living the belief.
It shows that, you know, it's not only not only announcing a belief in the divine,
mm-hmm.
And to promise to dedicate yourself to the same, but to actually do it. Because I guess, it is easy to make promises, but you have to take that step and put it into action, and that can make a dramatic difference.
Exactly. And you know, it's so easy to, you know, God and I can have a relationship, no problem. But with some of these other people in the world, that can be a challenge.
Hmm.
It's not enough just to say I'm going to do it, but I have to actually live it and be the example of what I want to manifest in the world.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you for doing the Thought for the Day today.
Thank you. Have a great week.
That's all the time we have for the show today. Thanks to Anthony Quinata for talking to us. To find out more, go to his website, anthonyquinata.com. Also, make sure to read his book, Communications from the Other Side, Death is Not the End of Life, Love, or Relationships. And he is a featured presenter at the ARE conference, Life Beyond the Veil, in Virginia Beach from November 9th to the 11th, 2012. Thanks also to Allison Ray for the thought for the day, and most of all to you, the listener. Thanks for listening to Reflections, the wisdom of Edgar Cayce.